and one daughter. When they became independent, he moved to Tokyo by himself and began his work as a diviner, which is how you knew him.
What sort of work did he do in Asakawa?
He was partners with his brother in a printing business.
I tried to imagine Mr. Honda standing in front of a printing press in overalls, checking proofs, but to me, Mr. Honda was a slightly grimy old man in a grimy old kimono with a sash more suited to a nightshirt, who sat, winter and summer, with his legs in the sunken hearth, playing with his divining sticks at a low table. With deft movements, Lieutenant Mamiya used his good hand to untie the cloth bundle he had brought with him. A package emerged, shaped like a small box of candy. It was wrapped in craft paper and tightly tied in several loops of string. The lieutenant placed it on the table and slid it towards me.
"This is the keepsake that Mr. Honda left with me to give to you," he said.
I picked it up. It weighed practically nothing. I couldn't begin to imagine what was inside.
"Shall I open it?" I asked.
Lieutenant Mamiya shook his head.
"I am sorry, but Mr. Honda indicated that he wished you to open it when you were alone."
I nodded and returned the package to the table.
"In fact," said Lieutenant Mamiya, "I received the letter from Mr. Honda exactly one day before he died. It said something like this: 'I am going to die very soon. I am not the least bit afraid of dying. This is the span of life that has been allotted to me by the will of heaven. Where the will of heaven is concerned, all one can do is submit to it. There is, however, something that I have left undone. In my cupboard there are various objects, things that I have wanted to pass on to certain people. Now it appears that I will not be able to accomplish that task, which is why I would be most grateful if you would help me by distributing the keepsakes on the attached list. I fully realize how presumptuous this is of me, but I do hope that you will be so kind as to think of it as my dying wish, and exert yourself this one last time for my sake.' I must say, I was utterly shocked to receive such a letter from Mr. Honda. I had been out of touch with him for years, perhaps 6 or 7 years without a word. I wrote back immediately, but my reply crossed in the post with the notice from his son that Mr. Honda had died."
He took a sip of green tea.
"Mr. Honda knew exactly when he was going to die,"
Lieutenant Mamiya continued.
"He must have attained a state of mind that someone like me could never hope to reach. As you said in your postcard, there was something about him that moved people deeply. I felt that from the time I first met him, in the summer of 1938.
"Oh, were you in the same unit with Mr. Honda at the time of the Nomonhan incident?"
"No, I wasn't," said Lieutenant Mamiya, biting his lip. "We were in different units, different divisions even. We worked together in a small-scale military operation that preceded the Nomonhan battle. Corporal Honda was later wounded at Nomonhan and sent back to Japan. I didn't go to Nomonhan. I lost this hand of mine."
And here Lieutenant Mamiya held up his gloved left hand.
"In the Soviet advance of August 1945, the month the war ended, I caught a slug in the shoulder from a heavy machine gun during a battle against a tank unit. I was on the ground, unconscious, when a Soviet tank ran over my hand. I was taken prisoner, treated in a hospital in Chita, and sent to an internment camp in Siberia. They kept me there until 1949. I was on the continent for 12 years altogether, from the time they sent me over in 1937. I never set foot on Japanese soil the whole time. My family thought I had been killed fighting the Soviets. They made a grave for me in the village cemetery. I had a kind of understanding with a girl there before I left Japan, but by the time I got back she was married to another man. 12 years is a long time.
I nodded.